ball is high, it is far, it is gone to win the game.
The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
And welcome into another episode of Nosebleeds. My name is Brendan Shorey. I'm joined by Evan Harkin and Barrett Spritzer. And we are here for an All-Star Week edition of Nosebleeds. The Derby and the All-Star Game just happened a couple days ago. I was actually there on the ground for it. Before we dive into all that, though, Evan, Barrett, how are you guys doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Like we were saying before, I'm a little jealous of Brendan's the work he got to do this weekend over at the All-Star Game. All the future stuff, like we were talking, that seems so cool. But doing pretty good. Kind of bored without the MLB right now. It's not too much to watch. You know, I had to watch Team USA played Serbia in basketball. Not something I'd usually be watching, but I'm excited for them to kick it back up tomorrow, get some more baseball going for sure.
Yeah, I cannot wait for tomorrow, this week without baseball. I mean, the All-Star Game is pretty awesome, but having to go a week without baseball right in the middle, right when everything's starting to heat up, it's pretty brutal. So glad that Friday is finally here almost.
Yes, finally we're about to hop back into the MLB season after this week-long hiatus. We will get into that. We will get into the Yankees and the Mets in just a second, but I want to dive into this All-Star Game first and the Derby. The Futures game happened last Saturday. The Derby was on Monday, and the All-Star game was on Tuesday. We'll hop into the Derby first. Teoscar Hernandez takes it on the last swing, actually, over Bobby Witt Jr. Many people were saying that it wasn't really the most exciting Derby that they've seen, especially with sluggers like Adolis Garcia, Pete Alonso, those Marcell Ozuna, those big power bats getting out in the first round. Did you guys have a chance to watch it?
Yeah, I definitely watched it. I thought it was a good one. I mean, I definitely like when they did outs more than the time, because you see guys able to take pitches. I think such a huge factor is your pitcher too. I think we saw it with Pete Alonso. His pitcher kind of really couldn't get it into the right spot. Every time he pitched into the spot he wanted it, he hit one out. But it seemed that he couldn't get the pitcher to put it where he wants, and it's on them too. It's on them timing wise. You saw some guys not get their 40 pitches in the first round or 30 in the second round. They had 5 pitches remaining, some of them, and never got them off. So I think who's pitching to you almost matters almost half as much as who's hitting some of the times. I mean, I picked Teoscar Hernandez myself because I knew he was one of 2 or 3 people with a pitcher that's pitched in the All-Star game before. So that was pretty cool for me to see, because I was calling it a little bit before the game, even though I didn't think he was one of the better hitters. I thought he had one of the better pitchers, but I definitely would like to see them go back to the out format, because the time crunch, it really just goes into a stamina thing, which I guess is a factor as well. But I like seeing, like you said, the power bats, big guys like Ozuna, you know, just going up there and hacking away without worrying about stamina, time, all that other stuff, a real true derby. But I didn't think it was too bad of one that the way a lot of other people do in comparison to recent years.
Yeah, I think I got to disagree with you. It's just the format that they have now. When they first came out with the time, and it wasn't too bad because it was a pretty substantial amount of time. I think they started with 5 minutes when they first implemented the time. And honestly, one of my favorite derbies of all time, that 2019 Home Run Derby, was timed, and it was an incredible derby. I think the way that they keep tweaking these changes to speed it up, to speed up every round, just really doesn't benefit the viewers or the hitters, because 40 swings in 3 minutes is an insane amount of swings, and you're just trying to go as quick as possible. And so you see a bunch of wall scrapers and balls that don't get out. Whereas if you have, you know, if you get 10 outs, I mean, you're putting your all into every swing, and you see those home runs that go, you know, 450, 460 feet, because they can really hit the ball. When you're trying to hit balls as fast as you can, you get a lot of more 380-foot home runs, 390-foot home runs. And that's just not as fun for anyone, especially when, you know, the guys are already swinging at the next pitch before the ball even lands, right? Part of the allure of the Home Run Derby is the fact that, you know, these guys are admiring how good they are, right? when Pete Alonso hits a ball 460 feet, I want him to watch it. I want him, right, to see how good he is. And then he gets in a groove. He starts feeling himself. And then he hits 5-6 in a row. He's not just keep swinging and, like, completely ignoring the result of the swing. And, oh, at the end, he ends up with 14 or whatever it was, right? I want to be able to enjoy and to admire the home runs that are hit and not just see the number tick up on the screen.
I think that's why I enjoyed the bonus round a little more than the actual times part, because you had those three outs to just hack away and see how far you could hit that ball. And so it was going back to that out format, which I agree, I liked the out format a lot better than the time one. That was, I mean, what I grew up watching was the derby with the outs, and grew up playing in the backyard. You get 10 outs and see how many home runs you can hit, and now they're going to the time. And so it's a little nostalgic seeing the out system and the bonus rounds. And Evan, I want to go back to the pitcher. I mean, we've all seen the pictures of Bobby Witt and his pitches, and people are like amazed that he even managed to hit 20 home runs, because like half the pitches he was having to swing at were at his shoulder level and like way outside, way inside. Like, his pitcher was not really helping him out, and that dude was still mashing. But yeah, I mean, I think I like that, going back to the bonus round. I think that's a great way to do it, and I would love to see them incorporate even a little bit more of that into the actual round.
Yeah, I agree. I was saying with the pitcher as well, that also goes into the outs. You're able to take so many more pitches. I forget who it was, whether it was – maybe it was Teoscar. I think it might have been J-Ram was taking like three pitches in a row every time, just taking his time. But like you said, and then I like how the incentive they put in where you hit the 445, I believe it was, within those three outs, you get another out. So there's an incentive to also hit the ball as long as you can, as far as you can, as hard as you can. Instead of, like you were saying, Bear, instead of the let me take a 70% swing because that's what I'm going to need to keep my stamina to keep going. I agree. I'm a fan of the outs. I just didn't think this one was – I thought it was somewhat entertaining. I like how they've been changing the formats to kind of keep up and fix the issues they see. But I agree, they should just go back to the good old 10 outs the way it used to be. You know, you're just getting a power competition instead of a stamina competition. One thing Gunnar Henderson said, who did pretty poorly, was that Adley Rutschman told him to swing about 70% because he was warning him about tiring himself out. And then he ended up having a bad first round, probably because he wasn't even swinging as hard as he can at most of the pitches. So you want to really get it all out of all these guys. Everyone know chicks dig the long ball. That's what we came here to see. So I totally agree. We got to get back to the outs.
Yeah, I think one of the most entertaining parts of the home run derby is watching a guy hit 5, 6, 7 home runs in a row. And you really don't get that with this timed, because they're going so fast, right? When you get into that bonus round, you only have three outs guaranteed. And so seeing a guy hit 4 home runs in a row, you're like, oh, he actually has a chance, you know, to go for a big number, especially if he starts out with those 4 home runs. Or he gets the 2 outs and he hits 4 in a row, and then on that last one, he gets that 425 and he gets that one more out. Like, that, it adds some drama and some stakes instead of just this, the clock sticking down, the home run number sticking up, and you're actually watching the home runs instead of just watching the numbers on the screen.
And from being there, you could hear the fans get into it whenever they had those streaks too. Like, when even in the bonus rounds, when you would have, say, Bobby Witt mash a few in a row, or Teoscar Hernandez, he did that in that swing off between him and Alec Bohm too. Like, the fans were getting into it, and that kind of the momentum helped a lot. I mean, the crowd gets into it, and I'm sure you could hear it on TV too. The more home runs in a row that a batter would hit. And I feel like that's a big part that we're not missing out, that we're missing out on in the actual round, like you said, Barrett. Also, are we going to talk about that national anthem? Or
I think it's better just not to. I mean, my mom, like 3 words in, my mom goes, she has to be drunk. This is horrendous. And then just it kept going and it kept getting worse. And then at one point I go, this is like Fergie level. And by the end, yeah, I was like, this is the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. She should be arrested for treason. This is the most un-American thing I can think of. How does anyone involved with anything that went into making that choice for her to sing the national anthem not at some point stop her and say, you know what, maybe today's not your day. Let's go somewhere else. Just a complete affront to the joy and the celebration of All-Star Weekend. Wow.
Yeah, I agree. I was just gonna say, I think it was the only one I've heard worse than Fergie's. Like, I was putting it right next to each other, and towards the end, I was like, this has got to be worse. It's just
way more embarrassing.
Because it's almost like you can't, like, Fergie was like trying to make it like a scandalous national anthem, which was just weird. But it was just like this national anthem. It was just like you don't have the talent to be singing the national anthem on the stage.
I was getting text after text from my family, from some friends, like even up like in the New York area. Just, are you witnessing this right now? I was like, yeah. Unfortunately, I am. It's not fun. Not fun to win.
I wish we got more videos of the players' reactions. I saw Alec Bohm laughing, but yes. I know, like, for the Fergie one, we had like the two lineups, all of them dying laughing. I wish we could see more camera clips of the players' reactions during it.
I'm sure half of them were smiling and laughing, like head down, can't be seen by the cameras, all that. So Teoscar Hernandez takes the home run derby over Bobby Witt Jr. on the last swing, Bobby Witt Jr.'s last swing off the wall to give Teoscar Hernandez the win. Now let's move on to the next day, the All-Star game. The AL defeats the NL 5-3. Big games by Juan Soto and Jaron Duran with a massive two-run home run to give the AL the lead. Thoughts on that game?
I thought it was a pretty good game overall. I was surprised to see Ohtani was the only one with an RBI. I think it was the only one that got walked as well, or maybe it was the only player in the NL to have a walk with an RBI in history. There was some weird stat about that.
Well, yeah. No. Well, according to Bob Nightingale, he's hit the first home run in the All-Star game since, like, 1995. So, if you ask Bob Nightingale, what was that?
As a Dodger?
Yeah, as a Dodger, but Bob Nightingale's tweet was he was the first person to hit a home run since 1995 in the All-Star game. But it was as a Dodger. It was just Bob Nightingale's bad tweeting again, which is one of my favorite baseball pastimes, is watching Bob Nightingale just tweet out horrendously incorrect things.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty obvious that the AL was a lot better, though. I definitely went into it thinking they were going to win, even though it's usually a toss-up in All-Star games. You just look, the lineup was better, the pitchers were better. I think it just goes to show kind of this season, you know, there's a couple teams over there in the NL, the Phillies, the Dodgers, but the AL seems to be a lot more star-studded, especially besides Ohtani and Bryce Harper, a lot more talent over in the AL, and they kind of went out there and showed it. I thought it was a good All-Star game up to down. You know, nothing crazy that happened. Probably the craziest thing was the Shohei home run that he absolutely mashed. That was awesome to watch. But I thought it was a pretty average All-Star game overall.
Yeah, no, I don't think anything really stood out. It's not like someone had an insane performance one way or the other. But I do think Skeens getting the start was pretty awesome. And just the baseball All-Star game is just one of the most fun celebrations of any one sport that there is, and the whole weekend. And I think it's just great to see, you know, all these guys come together, and you see that how much they really like enjoy it, as opposed to like the Pro Bowl or even the NBA All-Star game. Just seeing guys actually go out there, you see Skeens throwing 100, you see all these guys throwing 100, guys Shohei's hitting bombs, and it's really such a great encapsulation of what the MLB is. And so, you know, while nothing stood out as super extraordinary, I think the overall event was really awesome.
Yeah, that's why I like the MLB All-Star Week compared to these other sports, just because you go and you look at the NBA All-Star game, and then those players are trying. There's no defense being played. And then you go and you look at the NHL has a pretty decent All-Star game, but then you go and look at, like, the Pro Bowl. No one watched the Pro Bowl. No one's trying. They've made it so it's, like, a whole lot, like, safer with flag football and all these events now. I do like how, I mean, the MLB, you still have like injury, like you're cautious. You're not throwing these pitchers out there for more than an inning. You want to keep them healthy so they can go back to their teams and play the rest of the season. But at the same time, you're still having, like you said, Barry, you're still having these pitchers like pump gas. You're having Paul Skeens, Mason Miller hit 103 miles an hour. I mean, that you're not seeing insane guys try this hard. That's in any other nuts. Sports All-Star Week. 103 is nuts.
Yeah, I got to see Mason Miller pitch in person at Minute Maid. Just one of the most impressive feats of athleticism you've ever seen. Guy was throwing like 102, five straight pitches, and then would rip off an 87 mile an hour, just disgusting slider. That whoever gets him at the trade deadline is so
He's a
lucky.
rookie too.
Yeah, he's insane.
It really makes you wonder how these guys ever hit the ball when guys are throwing 103 and then they could flip a changeup down there at 88 that's dropping below your knees. It's just, it really goes to show just how impressive it is to be a good hitter in the MLB as well.
Well, then is it more impressive to throw 103 or to hit 103? Good
Hit
question.
103.
I would say to probably hit it.
I don't know.
I couldn't
Actually,
even
I don't know
imagine
because
hitting
there's a
103.
lot more guys that can hit 103 than can throw 103.
Yeah. You're not seeing this heat from every
Different.
pitcher out there.
But
That's
are there
true.
more guys that can hit 103? Like, how many people actually hit 103 consistently? Like Judge and Yordan Alvarez?
Yeah, but how many people throw 103? Mason Miller and who else?
Mason Miller.
There's no one else. I
No.
don't th I think it's much harder to pitch 103. I can't like we think Skeens was throwing gas in college and
He
still
was.
now, and he's hitting like triple digits. Mason Miller's a whole like 3 to 4 miles an hour above him. And it's not talked
Yeah,
about.
I don't know. I mean, I do know like the thing is because once you throw 103, like Mason Miller can throw 103 like 50 times in a row. But as a hitter, like you could see 50 pitches at 103. You might hit one of them, right? Like it's a lot harder to consistently hit 103 than it is to consistently throw 103 if you have that ability, right? Like the best hitters in the world can't hit 103 consistently, but the best people that throw 103 can consistently throw 103. I guess we'll put it that way.
Yeah, that's only like one person
I mean, Aroldis Chapman could do it. Ben Joyce
Yeah.
in LA can do it. You know, there are guys who can do it. It's just such a specialized skill set, and it's knowing that I'm going to throw 15 pitches and that's it. And so I can
Right.
throw one. Like if Skeens was a reliever and he knew he was going to throw 12 to 15 pitches every time he went out there, he'd probably be throwing 103. And it's more of a natural, you know, how much can your body hold take than a skill thing to throw 103.
That's fair. No, I can see where you're coming from then. So Paul Skeens faced, well, he didn't have to face, yes, he did. He had to face Judge. So a rookie phenom faces both Soto and Judge in his first inning, his only inning of work. I know he was asked about that. Some reporters asked him about that. But it's scary to just see that's the New York Yankees lineup. But unfortunately, they haven't been doing too hot recently. They're one of the worst teams in baseball in the last month, about month. So, I mean, do you look at they have an opening series against the Rays coming up starting tomorrow? Do you look at this series as a way to bounce back, and how do you do so? I'll start with you, Adam.
100%. It's a series to bounce back. They were very, very, very close. Literally, a ground ball being an out and a fly ball being an out instead of two errors from bouncing back, I'd say. If they would have beat the Orioles, who they still beat in two out of three games, that's still a very good series to take in Camden Yards right before the All-Star break. And you kind of saw some of the guys that have been slumping come back up to their baseline. You know, a lot of the guys that were playing really well have dropped down to horrific slumps. Verdugo, a big guy there, Volpe, and they kind of bought it back up a little bit in that Orioles series to where I think they'll be around. I think it was a slump for the team. I don't think the Yankees are as good as they were early on, but I don't think they're as bad as they were this past month, if that makes sense. You know, guys like Verdugo, Volpe, LeMahieu, especially, you know, bringing it back to okay instead of awful. And then some, Ben Rice has been a huge positive for the Yankees since coming in for a poor Anthony Rizzo. I know he had three home runs in a game very recently, but this game's definitely a bounce back. They would have taken that third game if Anthony Volpe didn't make an error on the last out, followed by a Verdugo error on the last out after that. So, I mean, you take two out of three. If they would have won that, they'd be on the top of the AL East right now. Now they're a game, I think about a game back. You're going against the Rays. You have Gerrit Cole starting. Everyone is, you know, gotten their all-star break in. Everyone got their rest in. So I think they will and should bounce back, at least take two out of three games from this poor Rays team. It's not a team the Yankees, even in their recent slumps, should have trouble taking two out of three games from, especially with Cole on the mound. So I expect them to bounce back a little bit and show you that they're better than the team they were, but I don't think they'll ever be the team they were in the beginning again. I think that was a little bit of everybody playing out of their minds.
Yeah, no, I don't think the Yankees are the best team in the league. They're also not the worst team in the league that they've been for the last month-ish, right? Like, they're a team that is going to be competitive in the AL East, right? They're going to be a team that I think is going to go down to the wire with the Orioles and be competitive in the playoffs and in the postseason. And if, you know, some of those guys like Volpe can be a league average hitter and play as elite defense, and if you can get guys like Rizzo and LeMahieu to come anywhere close to being all right MLB players and not horrendous, like, single A level players that they've been for the last month ish, then it's a team that will play as they can, right? The pitching staff's really good. You've got Judge, you've got Soto. And so it's a team that can do some damage. And if they put everything together, they aren't going to be a team that's, you know, going to win 106, 107 games, but they're a team that is going to be right there with the Orioles, give them a fight all the way, and really, you know, be able to make some noise. And maybe, you know, all it takes is to get hot. You know, they were hot at the beginning of the season. All it takes is to get hot at the end of the season, and, you know, some damage can be done, which is what we've seen in the NL the last couple of years. And maybe that can be the Yankees. You know, they're not going to be an 86 win wild card team, but, you know, in the AL, you know, 92 wins is kind of a low end hot team that they can be. And so if, you know, a hot start out of the break here, you know, five, six wins in their first 10 games out of here, and we're not five or six series in a row, and all of a sudden, you know, they're at the top there and putting together a pretty serious contender that, you know, over the last month or so, you would have said is almost impossible for this team. And so if they come out hot, they're right where they want to be.
Well, here's the big question is if they were kind of starting to heat up towards the end of, like, right before All-Star break, where Evan, you just said they won two out of three against the Orioles. Some of these bats that had not been doing well had started to do a little better. But did this break come at the wrong time? If you were already building up a little bit of momentum, you're starting to heat up, and then you go a week without playing any games except for Judge and Soto, and if you want to count Clay Holmes, I don't think he got any pitches in the All-Star game. But if you want a week without games, does that stop the momentum from ever becoming a thing to help you win more games and win a couple series down the road? Or is it a good timing for the break where you can kind of regroup and gather yourselves and say, hey, we need to pick it up and come back fresh?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think a big thing that helps is they had a little bit of bad momentum after that Orioles game, because they come back in the ninth in Camden Yards, they take the lead, and then Clay Holmes goes in and loses the final game of the series, which would have put them in the top of the AL going into the All-Star break. The announcers were saying it during the game. This feels like the biggest game of the season so far. You know, the two top dogs fighting for the one seed going into the break, and then they end up losing it in literally the worst fashion you ever could, with two errors to lose the game. So I think that actually turned their good momentum into a little bit of bad momentum, which is why I think that this break is just fine for them, because it gets that bad taste out of their mouth. But like you said, Brendan, it also gets the good taste of how well they were playing up until that last one half of an inning out of their mouth as well. But I think a fresh restart is exactly what this team needs a little bit, especially with all the media surrounding the New York Yankees always, you know, biting them on every loss, every bad thing. But this team does need to add things if they do want to compete with the Orioles, like we're saying they will. I don't think they'll compete with the Orioles later on in the season if they don't add bullpen arms. The bullpen's very bad, especially even if you're getting a guy like Loaisiga back, you're getting some of those guys you were able to rely on. You need more. I know there's been talks about Mason Miller. It doesn't even have to be as good of a guy as Mason Miller. That would be great. Then you can get Clay Holmes, a guy that's been so shaky, out of the closer spot and into a setup spot, which I think would make him a lot better. He seems to struggle with nerves, even though he's very good at reliever things, getting ground balls, striking people out, exactly what you need. He's just not really a closer. He's more of a situational guy. So Mason Miller would be huge. Any other closer? There's been talks about Crochet. I don't think they need a starter, but it would be nice because of how poorly Rodon's been recently to, you know, fill him a little bit. Luis Hill fell off a little bit as well, you know, not having the amazing first half that he had anymore. So the big thing is adding arms. You know, Ryan McMahon would be nice. That's a big person going around because the Yankees struggle in the infield at the corners. There's been talk about Jazz Chisholm. He would be an upgrade over Gleyber Torres. So if the Yankees do listen to these things that all these analysts, fans, everybody are saying they have to do, and at least fix up that bullpen, which I think very much needs to be done if they want to compete with the Orioles. And, you know, adding a Ryan McMahon, a Chisholm, a guy in the infield would, I think, really put them into competition with the Orioles. But I think there's definitely work to be done for the Yankees.
Yeah, no, there's definitely work to be done. But back to the earlier question, I don't think that the break can come at a bad time for a team like the Yankees, right? You got a lot of pitchers who are going to end up throwing career highs in innings. You got some older guys on the team who have been struggling. And so when you've got young guys, you know, who are almost guaranteed to get career highs in playing time, and older guys who need to do a little bit of soul searching, I don't think a week-long break can come at a bad time, right? You give those younger guys some rest, and you give those older guys some rest as well, but also some time to maybe find themselves and where, you know, figure out what's going wrong. And, you know, these next couple weeks are going to be really pivotal in what they need to do, right? Because, you know, maybe Gleyber finds himself, unlikely, but maybe, right? Maybe some of these pitchers start pitching better. Rodon finds himself, right? And who knows what Rodon finding himself is at this point in his career. But, you know, if a couple of the, like, five, six, if two or three of the five, six, seven guys who have been significantly underperforming for this Yankees team turn it around, that can it can be a significantly different story at the deadline. And instead of needing two or three pieces, right, you're only needing maybe one big piece. And the Mason Miller or the Garrett Crochet is all the move you need instead of, you know, the three or four moves that you have to kind of stretch the prospects out and decimate the farm system to try and fix a team. And so, you know, this break is probably the best thing that could have happened. Right, you completely forget about that Orioles series, right? And you forget about how it ended, and you just look at the result and you say, hey, we took two of three from the Orioles. That's all that matters, right? We're a week removed now. The specifics of the games don't matter. We took two of three. Let's take that. We'll build on it. We've forgotten the end of that game. Two of three from the Orioles. That's all that matters. Let's go win the division.
Yeah, we've seen the Yankees at their best at the very beginning of the season. We've seen them at their worst for the past month. Now it's time to try and find that good middle ground where you can play ball like a good ball, like a good baseball team, make some moves whenever you need to make them, with the whether that's one or two or however many, and go out and win ball games and play baseball the way that your fans know you can, your management knows you can, and the way that you have shown that you can this season. And so hopefully this break will be good, give them a fresh start. I don't think it'll give the it'll be a good break for their crosstown rivals, the Mets. I mean, they were 25-11 in their last 36 games, put themselves into that third wild card spot at 500. Evan, I know you were watching some of those Mets games. I know you were actually reporting on some of those Mets games down the stretch. Do you think this break is coming at a bad time for them?
I do think the break is coming at a bad time, although I don't think it's going to matter that much. I think this Mets team is so much different than the team they put out at the beginning. Not only are there different names, but the guys who were slumping are not only slumping, but turning around and having all-star seasons and not getting selected for the all-star game, like Lindor and Nimmo. Those two are easily all-star contenders. Maybe not shouldn't have been in the game, but right around the conversation, probably more than Pete Alonso. But like I was saying earlier on, this lineup was a Francisco Lindor struggling, doing the worst he ever has in his career. Brandon Nimmo struggling. Pete Alonso struggling. No JD Martinez, no Mark Vientos, no Francisco Alvarez. You know, Starling Marte was in there and struggling. And then you look at the lineup now, and Brett Beatty was there instead of Vientos, who was struggling. Now you look at this totally new lineup, which I would say is very close to a top five offense in baseball right now. And it's Lindor playing at a career high. It's Nimmo having a top 15 RBIs, a guy who usually just gets on base. He's top 15 in the MLB in RBIs right now after struggling at first. And then you have Pete Alonso doing what he does, you know, only batting 250 with a lot of strikeouts, but hitting home runs, which is something the Mets need. They get guys on base. They need guys to drive them in like Pete Alonso. But then Alvarez comes back, one of the best hitters on the team. He also has dropped the ERA of the Mets pitchers 2 runs since being back. So just showing you how much of a difference a catcher can make on the defensive side as well. And then you add Mark Vientos, who literally has been the best hitter on the team since he got called up. He has an over 900 OPS, really crazy stats for the short time he's been there, about a month. And then you have JD Martinez, who's been the professional hitter, JD Martinez, that he was for the last 10 years in the MLB. He's batting right around 300, is very good late game. So you take this lineup, the only ones who are really playing bad still is Jeff McNeil, but that's just what you're going to get out of Jeff McNeil ever since that crazy 2022 season. Rumor has it he started golfing too much and now he uppercuts, but I believe it, honestly, seeing him swing out there. But besides that, what I'm trying to say is this Mets team is so much better offensively. Like I said, I think one of the best in the leagues, that I do think their offense can carry them into the wild card, will keep them in the wild card. It's up to, you know, they're getting Kodai Senga back. They could use more bullpen arms. I think they're the only team that could use bullpen arms more than the Yankees in the MLB. So they also have some work to do, some guys to get. But I think that although the break has to happen at some point, it's a bad time because they've been rolling for the past month or two now, that it is a bad time, but I don't think it's going to matter too much, the break. I think the Mets come back as hot as they left.
Yeah, no, this Mets team is probably an all-time vibes team. So I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of fall off or loss of momentum or anything. Like, the team itself is the momentum. They are the vibes, right? Francisco Lindor is awesome. He never stops smiling. He's going to come back with a fire. He got snubbed from the All-Star break. Nimmo's awesome, right? As you mentioned, Kodai Senga coming back. It's a team that's, right, they're at the top, right? They're feeling good. And there's really only good things to come for them still. And so I think they're just going to keep riding that momentum they had before the break. They've got guys with new fires, new chips on their shoulder, and guys coming back from the IL that just are going to really combine to take this team where they want to go. And, you know, a wild card, a pretty firm hold on one of those wild card spots is where I expect this team to be in a month, right? They're not going to be floating and fighting for that third wild card spot. They're going to be sitting around, you know, pretty firm hold of that first or second. They're just going to keep riding.
Nobody really expected them to be quite this good. I mean, if you looked at what Mets ownership said a couple of years ago and the way that they've been handling this team in the farm system, that this wasn't even really supposed to be a great year from them, a good year even. This was supposed to be kind of almost a rebuild type of year. And then the next couple of years were when they were supposed to actually contend. But I think it is the emergence of, and you mentioned his name earlier, Evan, I think Mark Vientos is playing a huge part in that, coming in and stepping in for Beatty. And this offense has looked great ever since. I mean, this Mets team is one to be messed with. And I mean, you come down the stretch. I like what you said, Bear. I think they're going to be, they're going to have a firm spot on one of those wild card spots. They have a bright future along with, I mean, hey, who knows what happens in October? Anything could happen. The Phillies always make runs from the wild card spot, and who knows, the Mets could be this year's team.
I do think that if they are to make a run in the playoffs, they have to add a starter also. I don't think there's anyone right now. It would be Severino that you'd really trust to go out there with Senga. And we know Severino, although he's having a good season, he's not, ever since that injury, not really a guy you can trust, especially, I don't think, in the playoffs. So I do think to make a run in the playoffs, they'd at least need another starter, and they need at least two reliable guys in that bullpen. They don't have to be Mason Millers, but they got to be reliable because that bullpen is awful right now.
Well, I mean, luckily, I do think the starting pitching market's going to be a little bit hotter at the deadline than the reliever market, because everyone's going to need relievers at the deadline because there are a lot of bad bullpens in the playoffs right now. And so I think that reliever market's going to be a tough one to crack. But the starting market, I think, is going to have a lot more wealth in there to go find. And so if you know, if we're saying the Mets' number one need is a starter, I think they're looking pretty good in the ability, because, you know, you'll get a guy like Crochet, who's probably at the top of that starting, right?
Yeah.
That price is going to be high, but maybe not as high as people think, again, because of that innings. That he's going to just demolish his career high in innings. So, you know, that's a trade that you could maybe get for cheaper than people think, because he is also a guy who has an injury history. And so a career high in innings, people might be a little more hesitant to touch him. And so I think that Crochet is probably their top target, and someone who could definitely change his team from a fun wildcard team to a contender.
And the Mets will be back in action tomorrow night. They have a series starting against the Marlins. Unfortunately, that will be all from us today. Bobby Taffardini is the sports director. Nosebleeds is a production of WFUV Sports. So long, and tune back in next week for Evan Harkin and Barrett Spritzer. I'm Brendan Shorey saying so long.